views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
TheAngelLady.net. 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 1-800.
Views expressed on this. Voices of Women is a talk radio show that gives voice to the personal stories of women. It will inspire women and enlighten men to follow their dreams and create positive changes in their lives. Whether the audience listens to best-selling authors or a layperson like themselves, they'll realize there are others with similar experiences and feelings to their own. This show will give women tools they can use every day, which will empower them to step out of their boxes and create the changes they desire in their life. Chris inspires women to find their voices, speak up, and become leaders of their own life. Everyone has their gifts to share with the world, and it's time for women to work together to bring honor and respect to the feminine voice, which is within all people, men and women. Topics include personal growth, spirituality, creativity, leadership, and divine feminine. Now here's your host, Chris Stainis.
Welcome to Voices of Women on this windy day in Seattle region. I hope everybody is safe and good where you are and aren't having any trees fall down. So today, say it's October 14th, tomorrow is my birthday and also my anniversary for 6 years on Voices of Women. How about that? So I'm the founder of Woman of Wisdom, and I just want to announce briefly before we start that actually I'm starting my Woman of Wisdom season on Voices of Women right now because we're beginning our interview with Woman of Wisdom. And so we are launching our crowdfunding campaign that helps support the conference. It supports raising the feminine spirit, transforming our world. Our theme is remember who you are, honoring ourselves. We heal our world. And we brought some fabulous presenters we're bringing in February 16th to 20th. So mark your calendars. Come fly out to Seattle. It's a great time to be in Seattle and be with a wonderful gathering of women. And check out the crowdfunding campaign on our website, womenofwisdom.org. We'd love to and appreciate any of the donations that come through that help support us putting this on. So today I am talking with Margaret Starbird on Mary Magdalene, The Way of the Heart. Margaret Starbird is the author of several books about Mary Magdalene, most famous for her first, The Woman of the Alabaster Jar, which is credited with having launched Dan Brown's quest for Mary Magdalene, The Lost Bride, and influenced his book, The Da Vinci Code. But Margaret has lived and traveled widely in Europe, including pilgrimages to Black Madonna and Mary Magdalene shrines and Cathar citadels in Provence. And she has been presenting nationally and internationally with seminars and retreats honoring the divine feminine, the sacred marriage at the core of the Christian story. Has lots of interviews on various TV channels. You can see, check that out online, probably on YouTube. Author of 7 books, including The Goddess in the Gospels, The Tarot Trumps, and The Holy Grail, Mary at Magdalene, Bride in Exile, and co-authored 14 Steps to Awaken the Sacred Feminine. And we're so glad she's returning Woman of Wisdom. It's been a few years, and I remember she was with us in the early 90s, I think, when this book, The Woman with the Alabaster Jar, had come out in that time, and was a very popular workshop, and we're so excited to have you back again, Margaret.
Well, thank you, Chris. I'm delighted to be back. It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and so Margaret's going to give a workshop on Mary Magdalene, the Way of the Heart, on Saturday, February 18th. And in just a few days, the full schedule will be up on our website. And before the end of October, even ready for people to register. So take a look at our website for all our offerings that we're going to be having at womanofwisdom.org. So let's start in, Margaret, with how you first got interested in the search for the Holy Grail and reclaiming the sacred feminine in Christianity.
Well, of course, all our stories begin with our conception, so we really don't know what set us up for this work, whatever it is. In my case, I was a nice Catholic mother of five and singing in the choir. In 1983, a friend came to visit me, whom I hadn't seen since our college days, and she had just read a book called Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and she recommended that I get interested and take a look at that book because she knew I had a devotion to Christ and to was very interested in early Christianity. In fact, I was teaching religious education for Catholic kids back in those days. So she asked me to read Holy Blood, Holy Grail. So I went to the library a few days later, and I found the book on the shelf. It said on the front that, it just said Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And on the back cover, it said that Jesus Christ was probably married. And I was appalled. I couldn't get out of the library fast enough. I dropped the book and ran. It was too much of a shock back in 1983 for someone coming from my roots. So I wouldn't touch the book. And then 2 years later, a friend of mine wanted me to read a book called In God's Name, which is an expose of the Vatican Bank scandals and the alleged murder of Pope John Paul I. And after reading that book, I thought, I wonder what else they're hiding under the rugs in the Vatican. So I took In God's Name back to the library, and I checked out Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and read it. That was 1985. And I was so horrified that this, at first I thought it had to be blasphemy. I couldn't possibly cope with it. And then I prayed about it for months. And I actually corresponded with other Catholic women whom I knew really well from a prayer group we'd been in. And they all said, oh, no, it couldn't be. And then the more I prayed about it, the more positive answers I got. So I set out as a mission to figure out, could Jesus have been married? And if so, how did we ever lose the bride? That was my quest. And it's been the story of my life ever since.
Yes. So,
and here I am.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Well, and we're brought up, in my religious background, is like Mary Magdalene, she was the prostitute, and
exactly. That's,
and then there's also a lot of confusion mixing her up with other Marys. So what is this true story of Mary Magdalene?
Well, of course, our scriptures are the Gospels, the four Christian Gospels, the canonical Gospels are our major source. And in those Gospels, it's unclear whether Mary Magdalene's, the Magdalene is a title, or whether it's some town that she was from or something. I mean, there are all kinds of anomalies there that people are still trying to sort out. But they've gone with the idea that she was from Magdala. But the Catholic Church for almost 2,000 years preached that Mary Magdalene was the same person as Mary of Bethany, the sister of Lazarus. So that's really where I'm coming from, is in the Catholic Church for all those centuries, they identified the sister of Lazarus who anointed Christ as the same woman who went to the tomb and was called Mary Magdalene at the scenes at the cross and at the tomb. So that those are questions that actually are still contentious, because a lot of women want to say that she was from Magdala, but I'm pretty positive based on my research that Mary Magdalene and Mary Bethany are the same person. It's all one person. And she was the woman who was the most ardent of Jesus' followers. She was loyal and faithful all the way to the end. She was first to the tomb on Easter morning, and she's named first on every list of women who followed Jesus. except one where the mother of Jesus is actually mentioned first. But on 7 of 8 lists in the Gospels themselves, Mary Magdalene is mentioned first. So to me, it's clear she was first lady in that community, and they honored her as the partner of Christ. And for me, I guess one of the most telling incidents in my own quest was one day when I asked God just to show me whatever he wanted to show me, and I opened my Bible to a place in the Old Testament. It was a prophecy. It started out, "As for you, O Magdalene, the watchtower of the flock, through you dominion shall be restored. Why are you crying? Have you no king? Has your counselor perished that you mourn and cry aloud like a woman in labor?" And then it says, "Go now and dwell in the open fields, and from there you shall be rescued. Nations will defile you. They will call you unclean." So summed up in those 4 lines in the book of Micah, in the Hebrew prophecy of Micah, you find the story of Mary Magdalene in a nutshell, crying at the tomb and then sent into foreign exile.
Yes. Okay, well, we're going to find out more about Mary Magdalene when we come back. We're going to take a short break.
Okay.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
Beyond being this amazing neurologist, inventor, author, Dr. Dan Cohen has been called to look at technology and look at personal and spiritual development and merge these together. As technology uses the healing and psycho-spiritual effects of synchronized sounds, vibrations, electromagnetic fields, and how that interacts with us in our nervous system in what we're calling the Soltech chair.
The Soltech Lounge induces profound levels of relaxation that transition over time into deep meditative states. The synchronized sound, vibration, and magnetic field induce these states. The subject doesn't have to work at it.
To learn more, go to soltechwellbeing.com. That's S-O-L-T-E-C, wellbeing.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Tune in to The Michael Shane Show, the third Tuesday of each month at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com and connect with the ascended beings to raise your vibration and manifest the life you desire. Get ready to receive healing through the transphysical mediumship of Reverend Michael Shane and the ascended beings. Visit MichaelShane.com. That's M-Y-C-H-A-E-L, Shane.com, and call 425-971-6632 to schedule your full healing session now.
Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and I'm talking with Margaret Starbird about Mary Magdalene. And so yeah, we were just talking about her history of reputation and all the things, you know, how the untruths about her life and everything. And so I, Margaret, I'd love for you to share, you know, why it's important to reclaim the importance of Mary Lynn and restore her, which was, you know, I'm probably curious of your reaction to that when Pope Francis upgraded Mary Magdalene to an official feast day of the church. So, you know, that put her on par with the apostles. And I love it. I was reading some website saying that decree, now that she can be seen as the paradigm of the ministry of women in the church. And I'm just wondering, wow, what is that? How is that going to change things? What's your take on that?
Well, I have several ideas. First of all, I don't think the Pope went far enough to declare that Mary Magdalene was an apostle like St. Peter, you know, about on a par with St. Peter, rather than the sacred complement of the Christ, is a far cry from whom I see her as. I mean, I think of her as the co-Messiah, if you will, and the partner of Christ in his ministry and in his life, you know, that she was his actual partner. So I think the Pope didn't go far enough, but I was thrilled that he went as far as he did. I mean, at least he went that far. So he, in his declaration, he said that Jesus loved her and she loved him, which is so obvious, even in the Gospels themselves, we should have known that that was the case. Apostle means messenger, and of course she was the messenger. She met Christ at the tomb in the Gospel, and he sent her forth to tell the other apostles that he had risen. So from that point of view, apostle is a correct moniker for her, or title, but it's not nearly the title I would give her as the Magdalator, the watchtower, the partner of Christ, who is the good shepherd, and she's the watchtower of the flock, based on that old prophecy from Micah. I think the importance is really that she was marginalized when they called her a prostitute. And so instead of Christ having a partner, we have a celibate son of a virgin mother in the Catholic Church and in Christianity. But we don't have a true partnership until you restore Mary Magdalene as bride. She was silenced, and because she was silenced, the voices of women for 2,000 years were silenced in the Western civilization. Except for rare anomalies, women who managed to step forward, especially in the church, Hildegard von Bingen, various people through the Middle Ages. Occasionally, a woman was acknowledged as being spiritual, but basically, women, and especially women with husbands and children, were discounted or neglected. I don't even know how to say it. They didn't have a voice, and so this is why it's important to me. I grew up in a family with four brothers. And I thought having a voice was important. So I guess that's one of my, the factors that guided me toward this idea that, okay, because Mary Magdalene was marginalized, the rest of us were silenced as well. So now we have a Pope who's at least willing to acknowledge her feast day and to declare that Christ loved her, whatever that means to him. But I see her as the Sophia, as Christ is Logos, the two being the, she is the representative of the feminine face of God and Christ as the face of the masculine.
Yes, and that's an important point to acknowledge, because that's what's been missing, you know, for these 2,000 years of that, you know, right. And I did I don't know where, but, you know, like a Bible search, or they have like words you search in the Bible of Sophia, because I was kind of interested in Sophia. It's like she was mentioned once in the Bible. Now, maybe another written Bibles, there's more, but there was once, and it was said she was a feminine face of God, but that was the only thing in the whole Bible that was ever stated. And so, yeah, she's been denigrated to not being important. You know, you get one line, and that what that's done for us, we've had that missing feminine energy. We've been in a huge since, you know, the 70s, and it's continuing level of women rising. And becoming more vocal, and I think what's happening in our world, you know, I'm looking at what's happening right now in our politics, is just exposure of all the denigration of women and the way women are talked about, and not by every man by all means, but
well, it was a patriarchal entrenchment of all these thousands of years. And in fact, it goes actually Plato and his friends decided, they made a rational decision back in 300 and something BC, that they would not anymore go through the ancient ways of knowing truth through meditation and trance and vision and incubating the right brain, left hand connections. And instead, they would go into a rational mode of thinking in the masculine format, okay? So they switched from being lovers of Sophia, which is what philosophers are supposed to be, lovers of Sophia. They switched, deliberately switched, to being lovers of logos, of rational thinking, of analytical contemplation, of linear thought, and masculine modes of thinking and being, okay? And they made that deliberate switch, but they didn't change their name. They still called themselves philosophers. So it was a deception, in a way, to think that they were actually going through this, intuitive ways of knowing, and instead they were rationally setting forth to go on a rational trajectory. And the whole Western world has been caught up in that ever since. So we are all left-brain, right-handed people in our Western cultures, except for those few people who are deeply intuitive and artistic and whatever, and they're usually misfits, at least during their own lifetime, until recently with Carl Jung and his studies. People are finally realizing that it's the integration of these two modes of thinking and being, feminine and masculine, if you will, or right and left brain, that we're really trying to get to that that wholeness that comes with the integration of the opposite energies.
Mm-hmm. Within each vessel. Yeah, I'm bringing Mary Magdalene into this, you know, this mm-hmm. Sacred marriage, so to speak, of Jesus and Mary, brings that, you know, symbolic of the masculine and feminine energies and the healing
exactly.
of that, where we can move
exactly.
forward. And I think we're in that state right now of, you know, I hate to use the word battle, but it's kind of, you know, it's been a struggle for women to, and yet we're on the cusp of a lot. I mean, you just feel like women are marching, you know, you just feel
yes.
this energy of women.
Yes.
And, you know, and it is going to transform our world, but, it's kind of fascinating that, you know, now this is happening. And at the same time, she's been, by the Catholic Church, raised up to be an apostle, at least. There's a lot to this story in your books you talk about, and I don't know what's most, we can't do everything in this whole hour, but, you know, what happened to her after the crucifixion? And there's lots of links, you know, legends, the Holy Grail and all that. Where does that take us in her story?
Well, we can start there if you like with her story. We know that she was at the cross in the tomb of Jesus from the ends of the Gospels, and she's mentioned in all four Gospels at the cross and at the tomb. And then suddenly from the book of Acts, which takes up a few weeks later, she's disappeared. She's gone. There's no sign of her in the book of Acts or in any of Paul's letters. So we know that something happened to her. And the story that's told is actually the legends that showed up in Western Europe is that she was taken away from the turmoil in Jerusalem following the crucifixion and following actually it was the resurrection. Everybody was up in arms because Jesus was risen just like the god Tammuz. And they thought, oh my gosh, we've got a god on our hands now. The poor Romans, they were beside themselves because the people were roaming around in the streets proclaiming Jesus is risen. And they got Mary Magdalene out of town. Now the question becomes, why would they do that? If she was just an ordinary follower of Jesus, why would you have to take her away? The other one stayed. She's the only one that disappeared. So along with her sister and brother, Martha and Lazarus, they disappear too. They're never mentioned again in the book of Acts or in Paul's letters. So we have this anomaly of this whole family disappearing. So in 1989 or so, I wrote a story. And it's actually in the front of my Woman with the Alabaster Jar. It's the front is prologue, if you will. It's a story called Mary in the Garden. And Mary is sitting on a bench at the beginning of the story, and Joseph comes to her, and he says, Mary, I have to get you out of town. And she looks up from looking at the ground. She looks up at him, and she says, I can't go on. I don't care what happens to me. Why don't you go on without me? And he said, no, I promised him I'd keep you safe. Well, I gave this story to my pastor, my Catholic priest at the time. And when he read it, he gave it back to me. He said, you know, this story could heal the church. But he said, I had to read it. I had to do a double take, actually, because halfway through, like in about page 6 or so, I realized you weren't talking about the same Mary and the same Joseph that we always talk about. And I said, well, no, I wasn't. And he said, you were talking about Mary Magdalene and Joseph of Arimathea. And I said, yes, I was. And he said, well, I had to go back and read the whole story again. And I said, well, I'm glad, because I want everybody to read the whole story again. My thought is that Joseph of Arimathea, who is credited with having brought the Holy Grail to France, that Joseph came to Mary Magdalene and said, I have to get you out of town. I promised him I would keep you safe. And Mary reluctantly gets up and goes with him. And they leave the scene in Bethany, and they go to Alexandria, actually, across the desert. And then her baby is born in Alexandria. And so this is the rest of the myth, that she arrives 10 years later. She and her family arrive on the shores of France, and with them they have the Holy Grail. Mm-hmm. And the word in Old French is the Saint Graal.
Right. S-A-N-G. And we're going to have to come back. We're going to have to take a break and come back
All
and
right.
the rest of the story.
Oh, okay,
stay
wonderful.
Stay tuned, everybody.
All right.
Would you like to experience life-transforming adventures in personal expansion and world service? If you do, tune in to learn about magical innate abilities that you can develop and use to make your dreams come true. Joy Elaine is author of The Joy Chronicles, and she's inviting you and millions of others to join her in working with galactic masters, angels, and the Ashtar Command, as they assist humanity and planet Earth to achieve their ultimate destination of ascension. For more information about this upcoming event and broadcast, visit joyelaine.com. That's joy, ELAINE.com.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Are you feeling stagnant or blocked in your love life, career, health, or finances? Experiencing difficulty focusing or setting and achieving goals? Tune in to Spiritual Diagnostics Radio with psychic visionary healers Carol Dorian and Suzanne Evans. Discover the cause and effect of unwanted patterns in life. Tune in every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit spiritualdeed.com.
Are you anxious, worried, or insecure? Hi, I'm Dr. Friedman Schaub. I'm the author of The Fear and Anxiety Solution. Join me for my next breakthrough video seminar, which starts on September 10th. This program has helped thousands of people worldwide to overcome their struggles with anxiety, and I'm certain it can also help you. If you're ready to be free again and have a stronger foundation of inner peace and confidence, visit thefearandanxietysolution.com.
Dr. Bree Gibbs is a fourth-generation high priestess with the knowledge to raise your vibration and conscious creation. Offering a wide variety of services from goddess light and shamanic healing seminars to private reading sessions, Bree works with you so you too can stand in your own power. Isn't it about time you took your life into your own hands? For more information about Bree's services and products, visit silvergaia.net. That's silver, GAIA.net.
A Welcome back to Voices of Women. I'm Chris Stainis, and we've been talking with Margaret Starbird. She's the author of The Woman with the Alabaster Jar. So we're hearing this fascinating story. Had to cut it short, but of Mary and her child and arriving into France. And so, Margaret, what happened then? And there's the references in the material that I'd love for you to share, like, how you're getting this, the information. There's a lot of things in Southern France that point to her having been.
Well, of course, the legends in France are very strong, and people there will tell you the story of Mary Magdalene and her family arriving on the shores of Gaul, which was the name for France back in the Roman times. And they had a boat with no oars that apparently somehow miraculously came ashore after a big storm. And with them, Joseph of Arimathea and several other men, and then Mary and Martha and this child named Sarah. Interestingly enough, I was with French people and asked them about this story, and the woman who was with me when she got home sent me all kinds of brochures from all the little churches in the neighborhood around where she lived on the shores of the Mediterranean there in France, and all these stories, both in French and English, luckily, so I was able to read them, but they talk about little Sarah, whose name means princess in Hebrew. So you have a story of a little princess on the boat, or someone whose name means princess at least, who is later characterized as a servant. But the story says that Mary Magdalene brought the Holy Grail to France. And the word for Holy Grail in Old French is spelled S-A-N-G-R-A-A-L, Saint Graal. And when you divide that after the N, you have San, which is holy, and Grail. But if you divide it after the G, the eight-letter word, after the fourth letter, S-A-N-G, and then R-A-A-L, you have two words that mean blood royal. So you have to ask yourself, what is the Holy Grail? And the answer to that is usually that it is the vessel that once contained the blood of Christ. Often they say it was the vessel that was used at the Last Supper. It's a cup, in other words. But if you look at it as the blood royal, the legend says that Mary Magdalene brought the blood royal to the coast of France. You don't carry the blood royal around in a jar with a lid. The blood royal was carried in the child. Okay, it's the dynasty, if you will. The bloodline of the kings of King David and the kings of Israel flowing from Jesus and into his child. And Mary Magdalene would then be the grail, the vessel that once contained the blood of Christ. So anyway, this is the myth. This is the story that survived in Western Europe. And it survives in art and in artifact and fairy tale and various places other than written document. We don't have a lot of documentation, but what we have is a rich symbolism and an artistic underground stream, if you will, of legend and story and art that keeps this kernel alive throughout the Middle Ages in spite of the Inquisition that was formed to root it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you also have, you know, in the southern part of Europe, not just France, I think even Spain, the Black Madonna.
Black Madonnas, yeah, and even in Italy. But they're concentrated. The most Black Madonnas all occur in southern France, and then there are a few in Spain coming over the Pyrenees into southern Spain and also into northern Italy. But, yes, it's a prominent symbol. It's a symbol of the bride in the Song of Songs. It says the bride is black. She's swarthy from laboring in her brother's vineyards. Her own she has not kept. So that's the story of the bride. But it's not about the mother. It's about the bride and the bridegroom from the Song of Songs. So I have a whole chapter in The Woman with the Alabaster Jar talking about the symbolism from the Song of Songs. And, well, it's one of my favorite chapters, actually, because it's bearing on... Actually, another time when I was asking God to show me more information and I opened scripture, which is, I mean, some people call it scripture roulette, but other people are enlightened by it. I opened to a book of Lamentations, which is Hebrew Bible, Old Testament, chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. And it says, the kings of Judah, whose faces were once white as milk, are now black as soot. They are not recognized in the streets. So apparently this lineage, this is a prophecy, right? This lineage of the the kings of Judah, which would be the Davidic bloodline, are not recognized in exile. They are incognito. They are in darkness. Their faces are black as soot. In other words, they are not recognized anymore. They're like the janitor in the local school. You don't know that he's a tribal king back in his own, or chieftain back in his own country. But instead here, because he's in exile, a foreign, you know, refugee, you don't know who he is anymore. He's incognito. And that's the status of this bloodline in Western Europe. They went underground. No one knew who they were, and they, except they did. I mean, they kept their records, but they didn't broadcast who they were because the Romans were still looking for them in those early years. They were trying to root out anyone who was related to the family of Jesus.
It's fascinating, and I know a lot of it. You know, Dan Brown did in the, you know, the Da Vinci Code, and takes us on that
well, you know, yeah. He trip. Picked up on it. Someone asked me who my agent was because he mentions my books in his book in the library scene, and they asked me who my agent was. Well, it turned out he was apparently sitting on an airplane next to someone all night who was reading my Alabaster Jar book, and so he was looking over her shoulder asking her what was happening now, which is, you know, what, and then he went home and bought the book himself, I guess.
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about Mary Magdalene, how she embodies the way of the heart. I mean, because, you know, it says what Woman Wisdom and Voices of Woman is all about is that mm-hmm. feminine energy and how she embodies the way of the heart.
Okay, so here's my take on it. Let me just tell you briefly. My husband had a stroke this summer, and in the process of putting him through rehab and all kinds of help as best we could, my daughter brought me the book written by Jill Taylor, who is a Harvard brain expert. I guess she teaches things to do with brain science, who had a stroke herself. She actually had a cerebral hemorrhage, and it wiped out the whole left side of her brain, which is the verbal and analytical thinking, rational thinking. All those things were gone, and all she could do was relate to the right brain, left-handed, okay, the artistic, emotional side. And all the things she said about that reminded me of Mary Magdalene, the attributes of Mary Magdalene, the compassion, the intuitive following, the intuitive thinking, the intuitive ways of being. And that's all right-brained, apparently. And in our culture, we're so left-brained, right-handed, that we don't really get it unless some people go on drugs or whatever, but there are different ways of accessing. Meditation is one, where you actually silence the chatter that goes on in your head from your left brain and access your right brain. And it's that we're trying to marry. We're trying to marry these two elements of inside ourselves to create full, wholeness consciousness within each vessel. But we haven't had models for that, and we haven't understood it until now. So we've gone on our merry way with our right-handed stuff and neglected our left-handed. And so Mary Magdalene actually is the one person in the Gospels who cries. She cries over her brother Lazarus when he dies, and Jesus raises Lazarus from the dead moved by her tears. And then she cries over Jesus' feet when she anoints him. I don't know if you're aware, but in John's Gospel, the woman who anoints Jesus and wipes his feet with her hair is Mary Magdalene, Mary, the sister of Lazarus, and she's crying over Jesus' feet. And then a few days later, she's crying at the tomb, and they say, "Why are you crying?" And Jesus even asks her why she's crying. So she's emotional. She's actually accessing the right brain, left-handed attributes of her nature. And so she's the emotional one. And for years, everyone's called her Magdalene, and the word maudlin is actually from her name, because maudlin means people who cry easily, and they cry over everything, cry over songs and stories and things. But it comes from her name, because she's the one who carries emotion in the Gospels. She's faithful to the foot of the cross. All the apostles left, and Jesus is, and she's standing there, faithful. And in art, you find her kneeling at the cross with her arms around it, and she's kissing his feet if she can. You know, it's she's just the model for our emotional response, the way of the heart, and she embodies compassion as well. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, it's. I had a vision once. I can't say that it was Mary Magdalene, but my daughter's knee was in terrible shape, and she was trying to play basketball with it. And I prayed and prayed over her, and I had a vision of a woman in a long sari who came into her room, and she turned to me and held her hand before her mouth, like, shh, don't talk, don't say anything. And then she knelt down by my daughter's bed, and she kissed her knee. And then she got up and left, and my daughter's knee eventually, you know, it took her a while to rehab, but she got it up and running again. So it was, the doctor didn't think she could do it, but she did. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was, but she had help.
Yeah.
But that's the thing I envision.
Yeah. Well, then reclaiming the emotion, you know, like we're in such a linear society and,
exactly.
You know, the patriarchy, all that, and mm-hmm. allowing even, you know, for men, it's not, you know, it's okay for everybody to have emotions, and
exactly.
women are ridiculed for being emotional, you know, in the boardroom and politics. How dare a woman cry? Well, we're going to take a short break again, and we'll come back and talk more with Margaret Starbury.
Dr. Bree Gibbs is a fourth-generation high priestess with the knowledge to raise your vibration and conscious creation. Offering a wide variety of services from goddess light and shamanic healing seminars to private reading sessions, Bree works with you so you too can stand in your own power. Isn't it about time you took your life into your own hands? For more information about Bree's services and products, visit silvergaia.net. That's silver, G-A-I-A.net.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Sky Siegel co-hosts one of today's most popular psychic shows, Angels and Answers, with Artie Hoffman as she communicates healing messages from the spirit world. These messages can be astounding, enlightening, and life-changing. Born with the God-given talent of inner guidance and the amazing ability to heal, Sky has healed thousands of people. Schedule a reading with Sky now. Call 908-500-1474 and visit skyofangels.com.
Tune in to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. The Lucid Planet. Welcome home. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for more information.
Get into it for 2016. Do you want more prosperity, clarity, energy, and balance in your life? Join Lynn Brown now for one of her amazing workshops, each focusing on a key part of living your best life. For more information and to register for one of these amazing workshops, visit lynnbrownevent.com. That's lynnbrownevent.com. And get into it this 2016 with Lynn Brown.
Hi, this is Leslie Fontaine, and my show is Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com. When we're bogged down with our emotions, the hardships that plague us in our relationships, at work, our finances, we literally can't see the higher plane where we could be operating from. Tune in to Leslie Fontaine, Sheer Alchemy on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Voices of Women and Margaret Starbird. So Margaret, why don't you give your website for everybody so they can go read more? I know you have a blog there. You have all your books. And
I do. It's margaretstarbird.net, N-E-T, .net, margaretstarbird.net. And I do have a lot of information there and links to other things that are fun and informative. So, and there's a wonderful picture of Jesus and Mary Magdalene from a stained glass window where they're actually hand fasted. They're holding right hands. I guess that's on my website as well. This stained glass window that's absolutely amazing, made in 1906, long before Holy Blood, Holy Grail. And clasping
where is that?
It's on my website. Oh, the stained glass window is in a church called the in a town called Dervaig in Scotland on the Isle of Mull.
Okay.
I took a pilgrimage there in 2006, I guess, when the glass window was 100 years old.
Well, okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
So we've been talking about this, and we've been talking about this relationship and you know, the belief that Jesus and Mary were married and they had a child. So let's talk about this, reclaiming the story of the sacred union and the importance of that.
You know, one of the tip-offs was when I was first researching Mary Magdalene, I thought I signed up to take classes at Vanderbilt University, and one of the classes was interpreting the Gospels, for which I had to write a paper during the semester, 12 to 15 pages. So one day I was sitting with my Bible in my lap, and I said, Lord, I need to have you give me a passage that I should take for my paper that I have to write. And I opened my scripture to Mark chapter 13, I think it starts at verse 4. And it said, a woman came to Jesus with an alabaster jar, and she broke the jar and poured its contents on his head. And the apostles were outraged and complained about her because of the wasted value of the perfume. And Jesus said, let her keep it and do not complain about her action. She has anointed me in advance for my burial. And wherever the story is told, it will be told in memory of her. So I thought, well, there's my passage. I wonder why that's important. You know, it never occurred to me that this was important for any reason. I'd heard the passage before, but it just never struck me. But having been given it as a gift sitting in my lap, I thought, well, I better go research this and find out who this woman was. Well, I found out right away that this story of the woman anointing Jesus happens in all four Gospels. And then when I went to research it, I think it was, Barbara Walker, somebody has an encyclopedia of women's signs and symbols and stuff. And it was Barbara Walker. Anyway, it was, I just opened that thing and it was talked about chrism and about the anointing and how this ancient anointing was a symbol for marriage in the ancient world, in the cult of the Hieros Gamos, sacred marriage. In those ancient times, the bride chose her bridegroom and anointed him in a festival as a marriage ceremony, and in preparation for their consummation of their marriage in the bridal chamber. And the anointing in the ceremony prefigures the anointing of the masculine by the feminine during the marriage act. Okay, so it's actually symbolic of the marriage act. So they go into their bedroom and they celebrate by themselves. And when they reemerge, the joy from the bridal chamber spreads out into the crops and herds and brings well-being and fertility to all of the whole domain. It's like everybody lives happily ever after, just like in all our fairy tales. So it's that's the whole sacred marriage union from these ancient cults of the bride and bridegroom. But then later in these cults, the bridegroom is arrested, tortured, mutilated, executed, and laid in a tomb. And after several days of mourning, his bride comes with her women often, or in the case of the Gospels, the woman comes alone to the tomb, but it's the prerogative of the bride to meet the bridegroom resurrected in the garden. And the whole idea is the eternal return of love and life and fertility in the Northern Hemisphere in the springtime. So it's a fertility cult, if you will, in the ancient times, in Neolithic times. But it's ubiquitous all over the Middle East. They had Dumuzi and Inanna, Ishtar and Tammuz, Baal and Astarte. I mean, you've got all these different gods and goddesses who celebrate similar rites. They're never the same from one country to the other, or one culture to another. But they're very similar in a lot of ways. And it's always, at the end, the bridegroom is resurrected. We know this, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but in, I think, 1890 or something, Sir James Frazier wrote a book called The Golden Bough, and he talked about all these ancient myths of the risen God. but he didn't talk about the brides. So now that we finally find a voice, we find out, oh, each of these bridegrooms had a bride who joined him and celebrated with him when he was resurrected at the tomb. So, and then in the gospel, it's the same story again. It's the exact same story. The bride anoints the king at the wedding feast and then is later disconsolate because he's executed and dead, and then she goes to the tomb to mourn and finds him resurrected in the garden. And that's the whole sacred marriage sequence, the liturgical sequence of the sacred bride and bridegroom. And the Song of Songs even comes from that same cultural source, the Song of Songs.
So there's this common theme in myths. I mean, it isn't just mm-hmm. this one story in the Bible of Jesus and Mary. There's these other myths, and so it's kind of, and, you know, you hear about this of replicating stories of mm-hmm. through the different cultures.
Right.
And,
well,
you know,
I was a comparative literature major. I was a comparative literature major in school, so I read all this stuff back in college, you know, the Golden Bough and, you know, those kinds of things. And I was fascinated by it, but then I didn't realize how it related to Christianity until later, and I went back and said, oh my gosh, these are the same stories, and this is the exact same story. But I never even noticed the woman with the anointing, because they marginalized us and called her a prostitute all those years. And instead of calling her a bride, they called her prostitute. So... Mm-hmm. There you have it. So that's why, I mean, you asked me early on why I was so thought it was so important. We need to reclaim this woman's status, and in reclaiming her, we reclaim ourselves, remembering who we are. We are, in fact, the bride. We are the bride of God, all of us. It's like an amazing story of how this this divinity within is the integration of the masculine and feminine, and we've been denied the feminine for all these centuries, and now we have her back.
Yes. Well, thank you for being one of the messengers for that and bringing, you know, your books and your knowledge. And, you know, you are part of this, us reclaiming. And so thank you for that. And thanks for being on my show today.
Thank you, Chris. I love being here.
Yes. And so, everybody, you can learn more. You can participate in a workshop with Margaret Starbird in Seattle on February 18th as part of our Woman of Wisdom Conference. Again, check out our website, margaretstarbird.net, and look at it, you know, the many books, and she has a blog and other information. And I know that it's well worth reading your books. It's well worth coming and being part of the workshop at Woman of Wisdom. Of course, I'm going to be promoting that. I'm founder of Woman of Wisdom, and we're deep into getting everything ready to be on our website. I think our website schedule could be up this weekend, and you can see what's happening in Seattle on February 16th through the 20th. Also, we have a call if you're in the Seattle area for vendors, artists of handmade items, have a booth at the conference. We have a marketplace. Our deadline's next Friday, October 21st. We also have a temple with healers and readers, and that deadline is in late November, and we have a call for artists for the art show. All that is available to look at our website. Just go to womanofwisdom.org and look for the 2017 conference link, and you'll see all of that, and you'll see soon our schedule. And also, please take note and take a look at the crowdfunding campaign to help us raise funds to put on this conference so that we can put on a fabulous conference. It does take an effort and a lot of people to make it happen. And so we appreciate any contributions. You know, it's a ripple effect. As you help keep the spirit alive and power of women transforming our world, even though you can't come to Seattle, it's a consciousness that we're putting out there that ripples around the world. So you can think of it that way in donating to Women of Wisdom. Again, I'll be interviewing WOW presenters the next 3 months, including next week will be Nikki Scully and Normandy Ellis on the Egyptian Mysteries. And they're giving a 2-day intensive workshop at the conference. It's a pre-conference workshop on February 15th and 16th. So, well, we're at the end of our show. I am so glad to have had this opportunity to talk to Margaret about Mary Magdalene and the Path of Heart. And everybody have a great weekend, and we'll be back next week.
You've been listening to Voices of Women with Chris Stainis. Tune in each Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for Voices of Women Today, Radio with Chris Stainis.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
What is a brilliant culture?
And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Are you searching? Looking for a sign? A message you need to hear? From the great unknown? From the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul and the depths of who you are? The universe put someone here to talk to. Someone God.